When Brother Peter had been duly elected Pope, the formal election decree was at once drawn up and signed by all the cardinals on July 5, 1294. But no sooner was this done, and the excitement of the extraordinary moment had passed away, than the cardinals began to regret their impulsiveness. News of the wondrous event had, of course, already reached the whole neighborhood, and Brother Peter himself. Everyone, say his disciples, was filled with joy at the news, except the hermit. He was in despair, and could not rid himself of his distress day or night. He called together his brethren, and told them that he could never accept the dignity. They, however, declared that schism would follow if he did not. "This selection," they argued, "has been brought about not by you, but by God. If you refuse to accept it, you are going against the will of God." He accordingly resolved to fly with a single companion, but the people of the district, knowing his humility and fearing he would attempt flight, watched him day and night. He could do nothing but await the course of events, dreading on the one hand to act against the will of God, and on the other to be unable to benefit the church. Kings and envoys sent from different kingdoms arrived on the slopes to put immediate pressure on the new pope as well. Brother Peter had found in the soft rock a cave close by a well of water. Here, where in the summer no sound is heard but the scream of the hawk, and in the winter none but the howl of the wolf, he had already lived for more than a year, when he was called to his iron-gated window to receive kings and bishops. Whilst, with the sweat pouring from them, the kings and envoys were toiling up the narrow track which led to the hermit's cell, it is not difficult to imagine the curiosity with which Colonia and the delegates peered through the window of the little cell to see what sort of man was the new pope, or their wonder at what they saw. Behind the bar stood a man, evidently of very great age, seemingly dazed at the sight of the dignified throng before him, and by the knowledge of the errand on which they had come. Bearded was he, and pale, with cheeks and limbs emaciated by long fasts, and with the lids of his dark eyes swollen with much weeping. Yet with all this, and with his stiff, coarse garments, he was venerable, for his form and features, dress and dwelling, all bespoke the saint. Uncovering their heads, all present bent their knees before the pious recluse, while he in turn bowed down to accept the earth before his visitors. Then the Archbishop of Lyons told him that he had been unanimously elected pope, handing him the decree of election, and implored him to undertake the ruling of the church. After Cardinal Colonia had added a few words of his own, Brother Peter, receiving the election decree, begged the delegates to add their prayers to his, that God would enlighten him as to what reply he should make. For a time he prayed prostrate on the ground, and then quietly told his hearers that he bowed to the wishes of the sacred college and accepted the dignity of the papacy. For the sake of his own peace of mind, he concluded, he would not allow the Church of Rome to suffer further wrongs. Straightway the assembled company hailed him as Pope, kissed his feet, and received in turn the kiss of peace. Meanwhile, the mountain was alive with people swarming up its steep sides to gaze on the new Pope. Toiling up the steep slopes under the blazing July sun might be seen bishops and clergy, nobles and peasants. The new pope left his cell and came down the mountain to the monastery of the Holy Ghost. There he remained a few days and then prepared to leave it in order to be consecrated and crowned. To judge from the narrative of his disciples, he had naturally thought of going to Rome to be enthroned. But that was not to the mind of Charles II, and perhaps it is not to be wondered at the mind of the king should impress itself on that of the new pope. If Brother Peter was never the keeper of the king's conscience, he was very friendly with him, and must have been very well disposed towards him for what, certainly up to this, had been his disinterested kindness to him. and interest in his order. At any rate, subsequent events seemed clearly to prove that, in his utter ignorance of the ways of the world and of affairs of state, he put himself completely in the hands of King Charles and his lay lawyers. The members of his order, too, did the same, as they feared that, if power again came into the hands of the College of Cardinals, they would suppress them. Accordingly, both the king and the monks persuaded the Pope that at his age he should not travel to Rome in the summer, and that he should be consecrated at Aquila instead. A letter, therefore, to that effect was dispatched to the cardinals. Without waiting for the cardinal's reply to his letter, the Pope decided to go to Aquila. King Charles, accordingly, sent word that the Pope and he were about to proceed to that city, and that, therefore, especially in view of the fact that people would crowd it from every quarter to see the new Pope, he must look to it that there was an abundant supply of the necessities of life. Despite the protests of the two kings and the great ones in the church and state, who take delight in fine horses, the Pope insisted on riding on an ass. Some regarded such an act as derogatory to the papacy, though it was a profitable example to some priests and bishops. At any rate, the Pope had his own way. He entered Aquila on the 27th with a king on each side of him, leading his ass, and accompanied by three cardinals, counts, barons, and a countless number of people. The reply to his letter now reached him from the cardinals. They pointed out that it was not desirable for the Roman Curia to go into the kingdom of Naples, and begged him not to give ear to men who were working simply for their own ends. Furthermore, the Bishop of Oviedo, in the name of the cardinals, begged the Pope to come at least into papal territory if the journey to Pergola was too much for him. Finally, as a last resort, the cardinals even besought the king, by all that he and his father owed to the Holy See, to support their petition. Deceived, however, by those around him, the simple Pope would not listen to the cardinal's reasons, but renewed his declaration that he would be crowned in Aquila, and requested the cardinals to send him the papal insignia. As soon as the red mantle and the other papal insignia reached him, they were conferred by Cardinal Orsini on the new Pope, who thereupon took the name of Celestine. Clad now in all the state that became his high office, he received the solemn homage of bishops and priests, kings and nobles, and imparted over and over again his solemn benediction to the assembled people. In and around this church on the feast of the beheading of St. John the Baptist, August 29th, in the year 1294, stood some 200,000 people. They had come from every hill town to this solitary little plateau to see their well-beloved saint and countryman raised to the highest throne on earth. After the ceremony in the church, Celestine mounted a platform which had been erected outside it, from which he could give his blessing to the expectant thousands. Thence, this time on a white horse, he returned amidst the joyous acclamations of the multitude to the city, in order to hold the traditional banquet. Saint Celestine tried to lead his old style of life, despite being a far way from his hermitage. A contemporary poet, Francesco de Barberino, a man in his day, well known in royal courts, lets us know of what magnificence were Celestine's ordinary banquets. He tells us that he saw him walking about in his room, munching a piece of dry bread, whilst a monk from a little pitcher of wine gave him to drink. And he heard him say, as his mother had been wont to tell him, that eating and drinking in that manner was the most enjoyable way in the world to eat and drink. He was also wont to say to his monks, "But for you I would not be pope." Asked why, he replied, "It is a greater annoyance to me to command than it was a pleasure to do everything for myself."